This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
There it is, Monday. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Right away, the number is 855-752-4842. You know, it's on a Monday. Somebody out there with some eagerness, jump in, give us a call right away. What do you want to talk about? Education, public education, democracy, advocacy, you name it, Johnny Lupinacci. We do it. The thing is we are, you know, right now, we are, as far as we know, the only five-day-a-week commercial radio show dedicated to public education and democracy right now. Just wanting to put that out there so that people go, wait, what's this, Busted Pencils? Busted Pencils, man, it is a daily radio show where we get to talk about public education, democracy, teaching, learning, Friday night football maybe even too, all kinds of things coming up. But man, telling about it. And even in Finland, we talk about this in Finland. How do people in Finland hear about us, Johnny? The Civic Media app, dude. You know that.
Well, yeah, man. I'm just like, I mean, there's people all over the country, all over Wisconsin, right, listening to. It doesn't just pop from your local terrestrial radio station to Finland. It's an odd hour of the day in Finland. But yes, the Civic Media app is a wonderful way to tune into all your civic media programming. I guess while we're talking about all these things, Tim, we got a big week ahead of us.
Oh, we do.
Coming off of, we're still reeling from the DNC. Lots to talk about. All kinds of exciting action from educators that'll be participating in the show this week. We'll preview and sneak a little bit of that. But hey, just a reminder for listeners, this is the season. I mean, it's really always the season in a democracy, but this is a big one. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like the playoffs leading to the championship in November. Be a voter. Tuesday, September 17th is National Voter Registration Day. Plan to check your voter registration and be sure you're ready for November 5th. I mean, that's the big game. You were talking about Friday night football, but
oh, yeah.
I mean, Friday night football is always going to be here. We're going to talk a lot about how those kinds of, stalwarts of our community are part of public education for sure. But man, when you start talking about public education as the bedrock for a democracy, and what do we do in a democracy?
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you know, offer our civic duty towards a government for the people, by the people. But one of our main things, like one of our feature activities, is we vote. It doesn't just mean we go out and vote on voting day. There's all kinds of getting good information, having great conversations, asking tough questions. Looking for transparency, honesty, accountability, right? Looking at policies and then saying, hey, it's time to go do our duty. Mm-hmm. And part of that is to make sure we're registered. So voter registration, National Voter Registration Day, September 17th. Get out and vote. Mm-hmm. I always like campaigns, rock the vote. Because we're rocking here at Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk.
Tim, I got to tell you one of the things, I'm so excited. I just got in the mail today. My daughter, who is away at college full time, she did what she's supposed to do without me even telling her. She signed up for her absentee ballot and the fact that she can vote by mail. I got all of that today. I was like, I called her up. I was like, Lace, what's going on? She goes, oh, yeah, Dad, I took care of that. I went awesome. And did what I had to do. And I was just like, yeah, but those are the examples we talk about. It's like, hey, guess what? If you're away, you too can vote. There are absentee ballots. Vote by mail. Figure it out. What you said, go and dig that information. Johnny, look at that right away, though, too, as we put out the call asking for calls. Cindy from Appleton right away jumping in before we even get to the stuff. Cindy from Appleton, what's going on? What's your question? What's happening in your world?
Well, I'm a little concerned because remember what happened with Hillary and the criminal the first time around?
Mm-hmm.
He won the popular vote. He won the Electoral College vote. And I'm very concerned that that could happen again.
Could.
Are you worried, though, about that from the standpoint of what we said, like low voter turnout? Or are you concerned? I mean, what is the issue? Because,
well, maybe that's something you guys should educate people about, is the Electoral College and how it works. because I myself am not sure how it works. All I know is whoever gets the most votes wins the Electoral College, or electoral votes. But to be honest with you, how they gather all these votes, I'm still a little rusty on. So that might be a topic for conversation.
Thank you, Cindy.
I love that. That's a great question. And that's true, because it is kind of, I mean, we could talk about it and we can get into it, but it is certainly not logical when you think about how fair voting ought to really be, right? You think about, hey, you vote for a representative, the popular vote counts, right? But the Electoral College, I think, Tim, probably you and I both agree, needs to go away. But it's there in place, and it's there in place for exactly like Cindy was bringing up, to kind of be, it's supposed to be a safeguard. Is that what we might call it, Tim? Like they say, it's a safeguard.
It's the protection against it's the protection against the uninformed masses voting too much.
Right. So let me give a little quick definition of the Electoral College, because I think Cindy is right. We should talk about this because, one, we have some trauma around it. We've been hey, the majority of the voters have voted, but yet that's not that didn't determine the winner. What happened? You know, one of those it's happened a few times in my voting lifetime where I've gone to bed pretty excited because I didn't exactly know exactly how the Electoral College worked the first time. Remember that? Remember that Al Gore election, Tim? And it was like a totally different, I had to check my, you know, self, pinch myself and be like, wait, am I still sleeping? Did something happen? It sure did. But we can get into it. But the quick kind of way to think about it is the Electoral College consists of 538 electors, right? A majority of 270 electoral votes is required to elect a president. Different states, right? So your state has the same number of electors as it does members in its congressional delegation. So you have one member in the House of Representatives plus two senators, one for each member in the House of Representatives plus two senators, right? So the states have different numbers of electoral, what do we call it? Electoral voters?
Electors.
So different states have different numbers of electors, and there are 538 total electors. And the majority of 270 electoral votes is required to elect the president. So you're asking, why is Johnny saying this? Because don't we go and vote and they count up all the votes, right? That's why we see the state map when the election's going on, right? Because they're going to say, hey, this state has gone to this candidate, this ticket, and that means this many electoral votes. Our individual votes contribute towards possible electoral votes on the table, right? And so Cindy's call is really important because, man, high population areas could be swinging a particular way and go a particular way and not necessarily determine the presidential election, because it's determined on electoral votes. Now, if it's a blue wave, let's call it that, or what do we want to say? If it's a brat election, right? Then we got nothing to worry about because it's not close. If it's close, this is where the Electoral College, and this is what Cindy, I think, is referring to, has had a different outcome than the popular individual votes. And this is why so many people, myself included, say things like, I think this Electoral College thing has got to go, because you can't say we are a democracy. The people have voted. It's clear, right? It's not even like we need a recount. It's that close. It's clear.
Absolutely.
And that didn't do enough electoral voting. Electoral College is one way, and I'm going to go a little opinion, a little off fact, is one way to rig an election, but not quite rig an election. It's just like in there. In case it's close, don't worry.
It's a subversion. It's a subversion of democracy in that sense when you're talking about popular democracy. And
we should do more about it, Tim. We'll continue to talk about the Electoral College because we do all have some trauma around it. Thanks, Cindy, for calling and bringing it up. We got LA Tom on the horn. I bet you he could tell us too about the Electoral College. What's up, Tom? You love the Electoral College?
Well, first off, guys, I'm a joyful democracy warrior, just like our soon-to-be president and vice president are. And I would like to say that, the other guy is just not a serious candidate for the presidency, and we really need to be honest about that. He's not serious about democracy. He's only serious about Project 2025 and him being a dictator. And I would recommend everyone watch The Handmaid's Tale if you want to see your future if we get him in office, because that's really what it's going to look like. Yeah, in terms of the Electoral College, we need to get rid of the Electoral College.
There it is.
States like California, which are the, you know, the largest state in the union, and it doesn't even really matter which way our votes go, which is really quite ridiculous. Also, like Johnny was saying, you know, basically it's the number of House representatives that you have and your two senators that make up the number that comes to the electoral number of votes. And that can change every 10 years because of the census if people don't actually sign up with the census.
There it is. You know, right there, a little extra added to that, Johnny Lupinacci, your little civics lesson. Yeah. And that is, hey, guess what? Social studies educators, we always will dig deep into this. So Cindy, L.A. Tom, thanks for the calls. Really getting us started off on that, Johnny.
So let's play a game real quick, because this is fun. I like to do that anytime we're learning. We had a great recap of that from L.A. Tom, the Electoral College, right? Allocations are based on the census. So it is based on, right, the populations and states, right? So how are electors determined, right? So we said that we had that kind of formula, right, of how they were determined. But how does it become unequal, right? So how many are in California? How many votes, Tim, we know California has? 54 votes, right?
Right.
So California gets 54 votes. So at the end of, right, at the end of the elections tallied up, they say California's gone this way. That's 54, right? Possible electoral votes based, but it's a little more complicated because it carves up into sections. But let's talk about, for listener out there, because a lot of you are in the great state of Wisconsin. How many electoral votes are in Wisconsin?
John Lupinacci, that's a good question right now to kind of keep people on this, on their seats right there.
I mean, I know the listeners know. If you don't, you're going to find out. Stay tuned. How many electoral votes are in the state of Wisconsin?
Everybody knows there's a revolution when you're a teenager. You're looking for it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny just shared with me. We call it the Twitter X, the Twix. Johnny, I did not know that that's what the kids are calling Twitter nowadays, Twix.
Yeah, I've been hearing it too in some of the socials. You know, we've said it, Tim. We've stumbled and said, hey, we got to tweet that out. Or, you know, what do you call it? What a great kind of thing to call a post on Twitter was a tweet. But
right.
The kids these days, my students have said, oh, you mean a Twix. And I thought that was interesting. A little spin and morph on stuff. So if you tweet something now, I guess it's called your Twix. You can put it in a Twix. I mean, who knows if that sticks. I just hearing it from the youth.
We love that. And Jenny was there too, going like, whoa, check that out. I don't know. Twitter X, you mean that doesn't sound right? The whole X thing. Tweet was such an awesome thing when they had it, you know, and threads are out there. But yeah, now it's a repost. But I do kind of like that Twix, although I wonder what Twix, the candy company, would be saying about that. I think they might have a little bit more to say about that. Okay, Jenny, Tom.
Yes.
Wisconsin. The referendum. Who wants to be the first person to say, like, so what is a referendum when that happens? When I see somebody's yard sign saying vote yes on the referendum, What does that mean? Why? What's happening? What's going on?
Well, I'll let Tom go with this, and then I'll talk about some of the historical data. Okay.
Sure. And I think you almost have to start with the history. In the 1993-1994 school year, revenue limits were enacted in the state of Wisconsin. And there are the revenue limits are based on a per pupil amount of money. And it's increased over time, but Act 10 was mentioned previously. But since around 2010, the per pupil funding under a revenue limit in the state of Wisconsin is about $3,000, according to the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, behind inflation. So as that's progressed year after year, school districts, the only way in Wisconsin to increase your funding above this revenue limit number for both operational costs or capital construction costs is to go to referendum. And on an annual basis in the state of Wisconsin, you see more and more school districts that are literally surviving from referendum to referendum.
That's excellent. Jenny, did you want to throw in some of that part you were going to layer onto that? Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, with the districts being largely funded with that combination of state and local property taxes, these mixes of revenues, when it's local property taxes, it really creates a disparate situation in the state too, where wealthier communities are able to invest more of their local dollars into their schools. So it kind of exacerbates those joy gaps and opportunities for kids. And then also, we've just seen a dramatic increase in the number of school districts that have been having to go to these local referendums around the state. So in the spring, there was about 103 referendums between the February and April ballots, and they pass at about a 60% rate. And for this fall now, we're expecting to be about 54 referendums, so a little bit less. It is a presidential election year, so in these odd number elections, or even number, they're more likely to pass, right? And so that type of thing, voter turnout really has a impact on school referenda outcomes, but we have seen a decline in that percentage. You know, people have self-taxation fatigue, and our school doors have become like really hotbed places for these conversations about like what the taxpayer is getting out of your public schools without thinking about how important it is for the community to be pouring into the schools, because what's in the schools but our kids, right, in the future. So people's conversations have really taken a turn away from kids in schools and opportunities to learn, and it's become like a very political conversation around taxation and what we're getting.
And just one other thing, underneath that hard cap of a revenue limit, each school district in Wisconsin is funded on a mix of local property taxes and state funding to get to the revenue limit. And the really interesting thing about that mix is that it's not necessarily an accurate picture of the community. So the school district that I serve has one of the highest percentages of students on free and reduced price lunch in the state. We just certified next year at 70%. But in the funding formula, we look wealthy because we have a lot of property value. We really just have a lot of property. We're a large geographic school district that serves a relatively small student population. We have a lot of property value behind each student we serve. So that creates an inequity in how we're funded. So our local taxpayers this year are funding 78% of the revenue limit, and only 22% comes from the state. And in other districts in the state, that number is inverted because they have less property value behind each student they serve. And I know that's somewhat complex, but it's also part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, just that concept right there, Tom, a little bit about that. I mean, just I mean, got to tell you, it's the first time I've heard about that, the kind of reverse property versus in the number of students versus the property. As you talk about that, tell me a little bit more about that. I need to help me get more of understanding.
Sure. So school districts have this hard revenue limit that they can only raise money up to that revenue limit. And it's kind of like a glass of cola you'd get at a fast food restaurant. Cola would be the good stuff that comes from the state, and the ice is local property taxes. So each district in the state of Wisconsin, and there are over 420, has a different mix of local property taxes and state funds to reach that hard cap revenue limit. In districts like ours that have a lot of property behind each student, we have about $1.5 million behind each student we serve, get penalized, even though our student population is very poor, we get penalized in the state funding formula because we look like a very wealthy school district.
Mm. On that too, just putting that out there, I mean, has there been discussions to say like, wait a minute, this shouldn't be this way? I mean, it sounds, as you're talking to me, Tom, it sounds like, wait, well, then let's fix that.
In when revenue limits were enacted in 1993, the 1993-1994 school year, then Governor Thompson said that they should be reviewed and revised within 5 years. And we're still waiting.
Hmm. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, check it out, though, too. We're talking to Tom and Jenny, Wisconsin Public Education Network referendum. Yeah, it's one of those things that we need to learn so much more about. The socials, yes, Facebook, Twitter, Busted Pencils. More when we get back.
Anarchist.
One of my favorite Rise Against songs, Miracles, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Is it a miracle we're talking about here? This Grow Your Own partnership with Edgewood College, Madison Metropolitan School District. Grow Your Own special education teachers, getting them in there, in the classroom, fully ready to go. Nancy, I was wondering if you could talk about a little bit more, too, about the candidates. And we were beyond, you know, during the break, anybody getting the bonus content, they already got to hear some of this, but you're coming into, you know, the question is to when, what, how does somebody potentially approach, do they approach you if they're interested? Is, you know, tell me, I'm just wondering, and we're going to do this before you guys leave here at the end of this segment. We're going to give you a lot of time. But just even right now, if there's somebody out there sitting there going, I didn't know about this, and I would like to, like Nancy, how do they get started?
Absolutely. So there's a couple different ways to get started. One of them is to reach out to me, Nancy Molfenter, at the Madison Metropolitan School District in Student Services. I have an email. I have a phone number. Happy to provide it. And or they can also apply to work at the Madison Metropolitan School District. If someone has a bachelor's degree in any field, they can apply to our special education CC teacher pool, and then they can let our human resources department know that they have a bachelor's degree, they want to become a special education teacher. They work with me to sign up for the Grow Our Own program in Madison so that they can get reimbursed for their classes. I send them the information about the Edgewood College accelerated program and get them in touch with Mike, and he gets them set up there. And then before you know it, they are teaching as a special education teacher, making a teacher salary. They are taking classes at Edgewood. And the way it works in Wisconsin is that a person on a provisional license has 3 years to finish. So they can definitely finish a lot sooner than that, but the state gives them up to 3 years. They can work as a special education teacher that entire time. And I would say approximately half of our special education teachers in the Grow Our Own program with Edgewood College right now started out as paraprofessionals in our school district. So they got some experience, and then somebody said, hey, you'd make a great teacher. And we got them into the program.
See, that's the part too. I love this, you know, Johnny, you know, this, when I come at this, the whole idea of the teacher shortage, you hear this in there. It's like, where are our next teachers going to come from? Well, you know, they're right in front of us. They're with us every day. They're in our schools. They're there, which is said before these innovations and these partnerships, a lot of people were there saying, but I don't have time. I can't take classes during the day. I'm working at the school full time. I can't take off. I don't know that I can ever afford it. But what I'm hearing in, and again, this grow your own program is that, wait, we're addressing that you're concerned. Well, guess what? You can have a full-time job with us. How's that going to work out? You know what? You need classes? Well, we've got a partner in Edgewood College. We can get you the classes accelerated full-time online, you know, that way too, so that you don't have to, quote, miss class different times. You could take them when you're able to put them together. And then you've got together then the whole idea of then a mentored support system of people in there supporting these candidates as they go through, and they have up to 3 years. And Mike, you're saying the end of this then is special education licensure, and do they also get a graduate degree?
Yeah, I mean, we've built out multiple pathways. One leads to licensure only, which is turns out to be 24 credits, 8 3 credit courses, and then it's a 30 credit master's degree program. So a good number of the candidates that take this pathway are interested in the master's degree because the system sort of reinforces and incentivizes a degree of that nature. I know Madison does. And I know we've been given a lot of focus too to the need, the critical need in special education. This particular partnership that we have with Madison and is offered to any other schools across the state includes candidates out there that want to become elementary education licensed. So elementary or middle candidates, secondary, which is now grades 4 through 12. And then also in Madison, we have ESL bilingual partnership, similar kind of program, which, you know, gets at all of the needs there.
Whoa, there it is, the bell. Every day on Busted Pencils, that bell rings. And you know what it means, Tim and listener. I know what it means. Today's Democracy in Action recognition. We always choose every day some recognition of democracy in action, core democratic values in action in education. I got to say, it's a no-brainer. Today's Democracy in Action recognition goes to this Grow Your Own team. Michael, Amy, Nancy, all of the folks working together in the group.
That category right there, that Grow Your Own category. Yeah, Amy, Nancy, Mike, you guys are our democracy. And Johnny, you back, man, to finish that up?
Yeah, man. I mean, I didn't know that I went away, so I don't know what happened here. But, you know, core democratic value, democracy in action today is common good. The team coming together. Citizens should always work together for the good of all. Right? Everyone in the government that makes laws are good for all. So here we have a partnership between so many institutions and moving parts that is making it possible to bring great folks into classrooms. And that's what every kid in this country deserves, right? Is a really great teacher. So having that kind of resource and teamwork around that is democracy in action.
Nice. Congratulations, team. You guys get the Democracy in Action Award, Busted Pencils. Amy, I was wondering too, like when the candidates, there's also, you had talked about this during the break, a commitment to also saying, like, you know, diversity. And talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So in Madison and across the country, there's just a strong belief and understanding that kids deserve to see themselves represented in the teaching courses and the teachers that teach them. And so historically, we have had a largely white teaching population. And we found through some of these Grow Your Own programs, we've been able to diversify our teaching force, provide opportunities for education for people who maybe have been marginalized in the past. And so it's just really been a great boon to us to be able to have a more diverse teaching force in Madison. And we really believe that that partnership where paraprofessionals or SEAs are able to then get teaching license, that will further diversify our teaching force.
Yeah, and see, that's the part too. And I talked about this, you know, some of the early work when I was at Edgewood College, we were trying some grow your own programs. And we really were coming at this from the idea of saying, well, if diversity is a goal, well, then guess what? The students and the families and the people who live in our communities, well, there's already a diversity there. How do we provide those, our residents, our people who already work here, our people already live here, how do we give them the ability to come into a classroom? Because if we're looking to create the classroom of teachers that look like and have the values and see the world the way our children do, well, then they're already right here. They're already in our districts. They're already our, as we point out on this show, they're already our neighbors. Nancy, does that sound about kind of what you guys are trying to do here?
110%. Yes. We have, as you said earlier, amazing people already in our community, already in our schools, not only our paraprofessionals, but also family members. And we have students, well, I'm going to say this differently, former students who graduated from one of our Madison high schools that come back and they work as paraprofessionals, and then they want to become teachers, and then we can support them to do that through this amazing partnership. So yes, 100%. We, you know, Madison is an incredible city, and we know that we can fill the needs that we have in our schools and our students with the people in our community, and we're just trying to support them.
You know, and I think it's important, sorry to interrupt. I think it's important to note, because I know that you had an interview with our current superintendent, who was superintendent of the year last year, that he actually started out as a paraprofessional in our district.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, we had Joe Gothard on a few weeks ago, you know, brought him in there. In fact, he was the second time on Busted Pencils. I actually was able to interview him back in 2018 when he was at St. Paul and got that. But now that he is back home, and talk about truly a grow your own home story right there. Grew up in Madison, graduated from a Madison high school, then comes back as a paraprofessional, and then gets his teaching license, goes to Edgewood College, gets all of his administrative licenses, serves as a principal, serves as an administrator, goes up to St. Paul to become the superintendent, and now this year comes all the way back. That's a grow your own story right there, if you've ever heard one. Nancy, you guys see, you got some enthusiastic nodding.
Absolutely. We're so thrilled to have Dr. Joe Gothard back in Madison as our superintendent. And he inspires, right? He inspires our staff to think about what they can become and how they can help impact positively the lives of students and families in our school district and community.
You made me think of one other thing, though, too, as you were talking about this from the Grow Your Own. You're saying, you know, from coming, like, our kids are graduating high school, and Amy and Mike, maybe you might want to talk about this, but this program specifically right now, we've been talking about it for people who already have a bachelor's degree and they're going to get into a graduate program. Is there any talks or thoughts or innovations on the way that might be saying, okay, what about somebody who doesn't have a bachelor's degree yet? What are we going to do about them?
That has been.
Go ahead, Mike. You go.
No, I was just going to quickly say that that's coming to fruition here. We've been in the process. Our team, Dr. Lukey, has spearheaded that effort in the Division of Ed, and coming out with a program for just that. Candidates that want to work with children in the classroom that do not have a BA. So an undergraduate degree. Try to have a learning format that allows a combination of some on campus, but as well as, you know, online at a discounted rate through these partnerships. And we hope to have something like that ready for a serious launch in the spring semester of this school year.
Nice. Amy, you had some thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's an amazing opportunity to help students who maybe traditionally wouldn't be able to pay for straight out college, they're able to come and work with us and do some partnership with Edgewood and then become teachers like they want to be.
Mm. Wow. So much going on there. Just think about this. It's so exciting because, you know, this is, you say, the innovation, the partnership, bringing people together. So now I'm out there. Listeners are out there. They're going, I want to know more. Where do I go? Where do I find out stuff? I'm going to start go around the horn and everybody says, so Nancy, I know you gave us some things. We're going to put it in the podcast, but Nancy, where do they go to find you?
They come to the Madison Metropolitan School District website and they search for Nancy Molfenter Student Services. They will get my email address, which is NF Molfenter, MOLFENTER, at madison.k12.wi.us. Or they can apply to work as a paraprofessional or SEA, special education assistant, or special education teacher. And in Madison, we also help reimburse classes for people to work toward their bachelor's degree. So, Mike, I'm looking forward to that partnership coming soon with Edgewood.
And I got Mike's email here. We're going to make sure we have that, Mike. And you said you've got a little bit of some literature that we're going to put in the podcast right out there. And Amy, you've got your email put in right here. So the chat is ready, man. You guys, Amy, Michael, Nancy, grow your own Edgewood College, Madison Metropolitan School District. You guys are truly busting pencils. Johnny and Tim breaking it down when we get back.
It is. There it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education Wednesday night. Educators amplified in the house. Teacher Hallie joining us. Trending news talking about student loan forgiveness. And then, oh yeah, all of this cell phone. We had a little bit of a conversation too where it's like, okay, Teacher Hallie, you're saying, and even I think about this, it's like, I think maybe is a little bit of, or maybe even a lot of regulations, and I'm talking about the regulations that I typically think of on when we should be giving access, particularly in school, to cell phones. But Teacher Hallie, you and Teacher Joanna actually addressed this a few years back. Explain to us your cell phone policy in the classroom.
Yeah, you know, so we're always advocating for how can we have our public schools promote regulation and the well-being, like the whole child, as opposed to just their academic self. And so, right, one of the things that we saw is a distraction and prevents children from being in the present moment and actually being regulated is the cell phone, you know, because the cell phone is constant notifications. It's constantly going off. It's, you know, friends from this class, you know, fighting over this thing. And it's just constant, right? And the never ending scroll, like it is made to be addicting, right? And it is made to dysregulate you ultimately. And so what we decided was, you know, well, you're just going to turn in your cell phone and not even turn it in, more like you're just going to put your cell phone away in this very structured, predictable way. So we would tell students, you know, like you're choosing to come to this program, that the number one priority is your nervous system regulation, and something that really dysregulates you is your cell phone. And so you willingly are going to put it in the bag that has your name on it, and they would put it in a lockbox. And then they would get it back at the end of the day. And honestly, students reported that, like, at first they were like, huh? Like, I gotta give this up. Like, what do you mean? This is my lifeline. Like, this is my IV. How will I operate in life? And, you know, very quickly, though, they liked it. They liked the break from it. They could feel a difference. And so to me, it's not a foreign concept to think to do this. And then, right, like you're hearing more and more, I'm hearing from schools how big of an issue cell phones are. And so I do think it's going to take a lot of education and a lot of carefully crafted ways of communicating this to parents and children, you know, who will go through this. Like, I wouldn't recommend saying we're banning cell phones or we're restricting them from your use. I think it has to be more of a marketing of, we're looking for you to feel well. We know more and more from research that kids are more anxious and depressed than ever before. We know from the research that cell phones heighten your anxiety. They heighten your depression, you know? And so these are ways that we want to build connection in our schools is by having face-to-face connection, not through your cell phone. And I honestly don't know if schools will be able to articulate something like that. I'll offer one more thing too. I was actually talking to a teacher who it's their second year of teaching. So they're Gen Z or maybe a really old millennial, whatever, but they're young, right? And, you know, I was talking about potentially in the school that he teaches in, they are going to try to limit these cell phones and came up with this whole cell phone thing and all these, you know, what's going to happen if you have the cell phone? What's the consequence? Blah, 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 you know, and the conversations around that. And then he was like, okay, I'm going to be honest with you. When I was in college, I was really like, well, I think we should have the cell phones and we just teach kids how to use them responsibly. And he's like, and then I entered the classroom and I was like, like, this is like beyond his level of like, holy cow. And we got into the conversation about how, right, developmentally for these kids' brains. So I'm talking probably from like 10 years old to 18, like literally these children's brains can't handle it. So it's not just like a learning opportunity or like a teaching moment. They are addicting. And it would be as if we were handing out vapes in the beginning of school to be like, here's a vape and there's a vape. And then being like, why are you all addicted? Like, they walk in with their cell phones and it's just as addicting to their developing brains. So there's not anything wrong with them, but it was interesting to hear this really young teacher being like, it's insane. Like, he's like, I would try to teach around it. He's like, I teach a media class. And so it just lended into it and how like they can't get away from it. It is literally like, honestly, like crack cocaine. It's that addicting to the brains. And so, yeah, that's why I'm a proponent from this, but done in a way that helps parents feel empowered, that helps them feel like, yes, I can support this, that helps students feel like I'll feel better by doing this. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's what will happen, but there is my soapbox on cell phones in schools.
I love it. I got to tell you, I forget about a developing 18-year-old brain. Right. I know a 57-year-old brain that gets really anxious when my correct phone and I know the same thing though. It's just like you said, it's like I gotta put it away.
Yeah.
But then there's this weird, as you said, Hallie, it's an addiction when yes. I do put it away, a feeling like something's missing and then I'm about to quote miss out on something.
Right.
And I remember a few times over the years where I've either, you know, broke my phone, lost my phone, and I truly had to go a few days without it. Mm-hmm. And I started feeling better.
Right.
I started feeling better without my phone.
I know. I feel the same way. Like my husband would be dying right now if he heard me. I've been addicted to my phone this whole summer and I know it, you know, but it's like, right. It's addicting. And it's like, I don't have it near me. And then I'll be like, oh, I better check my notifications. And so, right. Imagine being 16 and taking that all on. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is for sure. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, educators amplified in the house, everybody, listener, callers, man, what a night, what a night. Lots of technicalities there. Gotta love it, though. We're always in there. Tomorrow night, man, Wisconsin Public Education Network in the house, special guest. Ooh. Teacher Hallie, thanks for busting pencils. Good night, everybody.